Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Jojo Rabbit, Frankie, and Motherless Brooklyn. My request is, couldn't you have found a film with another name in the title?
Jill, I went to every movie theater in town like a beggar, one door to the next.
A mendicant.
Looking for another movie. Another movie that we could do. I have three movies with names in the title, but no, there wasn't one. So I had to go with something else. But maybe next time we can come up with all movies with animals in the title, like, for example, Jojo Rabbit, which is maybe a good movie to start with today. Jojo Rabbit is that's an unusual title, and it's a very unusual title for a movie which turns out to be about Adolf Hitler. And yes, this is a comedy about Adolf Hitler. It is not a sort of a sunny-faced comedy about Adolf Hitler. It is obviously a dark comedy in various ways. But it is by no means, well, it is making light of Hitler, but making light of Hitler in the way that making light of something is a good way of combating it. It's a movie that tries to combat the kind of evil represented by a tyrant and a fascist and a killer like Hitler by making it ridiculous. That's very much what Jojo Rabbit does. And by the way, it's a movie which I think that the director of the movie has recognized. It's a movie that's becoming more and more kind of pertinent as we have fascism resurging in various places around the world even now. Anyway, Jojo Rabbit was directed by and written by, although it's based on a novel, by somebody else, by Taika Waititi, who is the very, very interesting New Zealand filmmaker who he's a multi-talented person. He is a writer, a director, a producer, an actor. He stars in Jojo Rabbit. He plays Hitler. Very, very talented person. He's probably best known for the excellent mockumentary called What We Do in the Shadows, which is a movie about vampires, another dark comedy that's been spun off into, I think, a couple of TV series by now. Anyway, Taika Waititi has written and directed Jojo Rabbit, and he plays Hitler. And the reason the movie has that title is that the other main character is a 10-year-old boy who is known as Jojo. His name is Johannes. So he is Jojo, and he is a little boy in the Hitler era. He is a member of the Hitler Youth, and he fantasizes about Hitler. Hitler is his hero, and he imagines Hitler visiting him in his bedroom and giving him practice and giving the Heil Hitler salute and all this sort of thing. So that is who is our main character, is this little boy named Jojo, who is a very eager member of the Hitler Youth. But things get complicated very, very quickly because it turns out that his mother, Rosie, who is played by Scarlett Johansson, is hiding a Jewish woman in her house. And by the way, the mother, Rosie, is involved in various anti-Hitler, anti-Nazi activities. And among other things, she is hiding a young Jewish woman in her house, hiding away behind the walls. The young Jewish woman's name is Elsa. And so Jojo finds himself in this very interesting situation where he is always fantasizing about and having imaginary adventures with Hitler, while in his real life going off to the Hitler Youth and the Hitler Youth camp and all of this stuff, which is very amusingly portrayed, I must say. And he discovers the young Jewish woman, Elsa, and becomes her friend in the house. He doesn't really understand what's going on. He doesn't understand why this woman is sort of living and hiding in the house. He gradually figures things out. And of course, the whole thing has to be kept a secret because otherwise his mother would be in horrible, horrible trouble. So would Elsa, of course. So anyway, that is what the movie is about. It has extremely serious angles, such as the young Jewish woman and the mother who was working in the anti-Nazi resistance, who would both be in terrible danger if their presence were to be discovered. And then we have our 10-year-old hero having constant daydreams of Hitler, who is always kind of coming to visit him. I have to mention one other character, who is Captain Klesendorf, played by Sam Rockwell, a wonderful performance. And he is a local Nazi who gets to know know Jojo, and who is, he could be very dangerous if he finds out the other things that are going on in Jojo's life, but Jojo develops an interesting relationship with him as well. So yes, Jojo Rabbit is just as much of a comedy and even a kind of a farce as its title suggests, but it's obviously about really, really serious things as well. And again, it's not just about the Nazi era. It's about just the presence of evil in the world and about how one way of combating evil in the world is to make fun of it, to mock it, to see its preposterous side. A lot of the humor in Jojo Rabbit is sort of developed from taking some of today's kinds of folkways and applying them to the Nazi era. Jojo goes off to Hitler Youth Camp where they're always greeting the kids with things like, "Hey kids, Heil Hitler, kids!" There he goes, sort of Heil Hitler, you know, as if they were in some sort of a present-day situation. It's a funny movie in a lot of ways. It's being peddled as an anti-hate satire, and it is exactly that. After a while, about halfway through, I thought that the conceit of it was sort of starting to wear a little bit thin, and the comedy does not sustain at the high level at which it begins, but it's an amusing film, and it's a worthwhile film, and I hope it prospers, because we certainly need, in this day and age, all of the kind of anti-fascist comedy that we can get. Second movie I'd like to talk about today, Jill, is really quite different in all kinds of ways. And I found it rather disappointing, I will say at the outset. Frankie. This is a movie which is directed by and co-written by Ira Sachs. And Ira Sachs is a really, really interesting filmmaker who's just done some terrific work in recent years, and I think is very, very talented, and that's one of the reasons why I was disappointed in Frankie, is that I just didn't think that it lived up to his earlier films, particularly Married Life, which is a movie I like a great deal, and Love is Strange, which is an interesting movie, and Little Men. Anyway, those are some of the movies he's made, and is very good, and I just didn't think Frankie quite measured up to that standard, even though it has a really, really interesting cast. Most importantly, the wonderful Isabel Huppert, who plays a very, very famous actress, I suppose an actress as famous as Isabel Huppert. And her name is Françoise, for short, she is called Frankie, and she is facing a crisis in her life. And she goes off with her husband, played by another phenomenally terrific actor, Brendan Gleeson. They go off for a vacation in Portugal. In Sintra, in Portugal, in the Portuguese Riviera, while she is facing this family crisis. And all kinds of other people come and join them there or kind of run into them there. Various other characters, including a couple of people who are there to work on the new Star Wars movie, which is doing some of its filming nearby. And there's a restaurateur who they happen to know and various others. And all of these people, it's really an ensemble film. We have all these different characters who come there mostly, not entirely, but mostly at the behest of Frankie, our main character, who is, again, going through a life crisis. And we eventually find out what the life crisis is. And we see how various people respond to that, how different people are relating to Frankie herself in other ways, and how they're relating to one another. Again, it's really an ensemble film, and the people in it represent different generations, different sort of stations in life. But they're all kind of, for the space of the film, circulating around Frankie. And the movie basically takes place in a single day. So it's very much a kind of a concentrated film without much in the way of story development, but a whole lot in the way of interaction among very different kinds of characters. So again, I want to emphasize what a good cast this movie has. I mentioned Brendan Gleeson, Isabel Huppert, who is really the center of the whole thing. Jeremy Renier is in it, gifted French actor. Greg Kinnear, who we don't see all that often in the movies these days, but he is very, very good in one of the secondary parts. And Marisa Tomei, who is, I think, a wonderful actress and who we also don't see all that much of these days, but they're very much in this movie. And the movie really goes out of its way to be a kind of a sensitive character study about human interactions. Again, I found it just never really developed any momentum. It's very nicely shot, and people who have been writing about the film have been emphasizing the gorgeous kind of countryside, the gorgeous Riviera settings. There is green everywhere. There is the blue of the sea, the trees, the flowers, and everything. But, you know, as much as I noticed these things very emphatically while I was watching the film, the way they were filmed was very static. And that's one of the problems with the movie. There's all this gorgeousness around, but really a lot of the time there's not a leaf stirring in the trees. There's not a blade of grass stirring on the ground. Even though there's this sort of splendor of nature, it's very static, and it looks like it just sort of was placed there as a backdrop rather than really being a vivid and alive setting for what the characters are experiencing. That was really the problem with the movie. I found the characters fairly static, I found the dialogue fairly static, and I found those gorgeous settings, as beautiful as they are, kind of static as well. Now, all of this changes in the last maybe 2 or 3 minutes of the movie, which is a very static shot. The camera is just in one place, observing from a very, very long distance what's going on. And this is the kind of thing that Ira Sachs does best. It's a gorgeous shot. It is loaded with atmosphere. The music is exactly right for it. In the last 2 or 3 minutes, the movie totally comes alive. If the whole movie were that wonderful, I would be raving about it. Instead, I'm having to say Frankie is a disappointment from Ira Sachs, but he is still a filmmaker who I find fascinating, and I still really look forward to following his future work. And our final film for today, Motherless Brooklyn. This is a movie which is written and directed by Edward Norton. Very, very major actor and a very, very talented actor with all kinds of different movies to his credit. It is based on a novel by Jonathan Lethem. And that's an important part of my little story here about this, because a lot of people have read the novel, Motherless Brooklyn, by Jonathan Lethem. It's a very interesting novel in a lot of ways. But, man, I have rarely seen a novel adaptation of a novel by a pretty major contemporary novelist, which has so little to do with the original novel. Boy, Edward Norton has departed in all kinds of ways. I'm not sure if it's to the movie's advantage or not, because I'm not that crazy about the novel. But if you go to see the movie because you love the novel, you might be disappointed in the movie because it really takes a lot of departures. Anyway, Motherless Brooklyn, the novel and the film, take place back in the 1950s in Brooklyn, New York. And the novel and the movie both have, there's a sort of a, I'll call it a gimmick, although it's an interesting one. The main character, who is just sort of a young man who grew up an orphan and got mixed up with bad company and works for a sort of a small-time Brooklyn mobster, this character has Tourette syndrome. His name is Lionel, and he is constantly bursting out with non sequiturs and things he is compelled to say, just nonsense syllables or crazy puttings together as different kinds of words, and he has all these physical tics. He has to touch people in certain ways. He has to move his body in certain ways. So we have this Tourette syndrome main character, and the movie is in no way making fun of this affliction, which is a real thing. We have a tremendous amount of sympathy for Lionel, and he is dealing with his affliction pretty well. He seems to have learned to come to grips with it over the years of growing to adulthood, despite his difficult early childhood as growing up as an orphan and so forth. In any case, he has gone to work for this small-time mobster whose name is Frank Minna. And Minna gets killed. It happens near the beginning of the movie, and this is one way in which it's very faithful to the novel. It happens near the beginning of the novel as well. And now what our main character, Lionel, really wants to do is to find out who killed Lionel and somehow get revenge for this. And he is joined in this in various ways by the other boys, or I should say young men, who have worked for Lionel over the years. And along the way, trying to solve this crime and figure out what happened to get revenge. Our young character, Lionel, meets all kinds of other interesting people. Now, a big, big, big part of the movie, which is simply really not there at all in the novel, is the presence of a character named Moses Randolph, who is obviously meant to be a takeoff on the real-life developer Robert Moses, who did so much building in and around New York City back in the 1950s and thereabouts, played in the movie by Alec Baldwin. He becomes an enormously important character in the film, as does his brother Paul, played by Willem Dafoe, that wonderful actor. Again, no particular counterpart to this in the novel. All of this is taking off in very, very different directions. So whereas the novel had a whole lot of stuff about, of all things, a Buddhist retreat and characters who are involved in meditation and who have this sort of secluded meditation spot, one in New York City in an apartment building, another one way up in northern New England. All of this stuff, which is hugely important in the novel, is completely missing from the movie, and the movie replaces this with all of this stuff about this developer based on Robert Moses and his his down-on-his-luck brother and so forth and so on. So I make no judgments here. A movie has to exist on its own. I found the novel very interesting in about its first half, while it was developing the character of Lionel with his Tourette syndrome and so forth and so on. And then it sort of turned into standard gumshoe private detective stuff. The movie I found fairly interesting at the beginning, while it was developing the character of Lionel and his Tourette syndrome and so forth. And then it also turns into just sort of meandering detective story stuff, which interested me a lot less. Edward Norton gives a fine performance. Alec Baldwin is terrific. Willem Dafoe is also terrific. You get to see Bruce Willis a little bit playing the character of Frank Mena, who gets killed. So a good cast, a kind of an interesting story, but this movie is almost 2.5 hours long, and it just doesn't have the ideas to sustain a movie of that length. So I would have to give a very mixed review to Motherless Brooklyn. It has its points, and it has a terrific cast, but after a while, I just kind of got tired of it. So that is my somewhat tired-out story this week, Joe.
Thank you very much, David Starrett. Films in Focus. The films Jojo Rabbit, Frankie, and Motherless Brooklyn.